the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hello and welcome to Education Now's May 3rd edition. This is your host, Athena Melville. I'm delighted to share this interview with Leah May Horsley on wildcrafting. And I want to dedicate this show to Hannah Newcomer, who is 11 years old and just led a wildflower walk for the Anderson Valley Land Trust. And I am so proud of her. Wildcrafting is the art of searching for edible and medicinal plants. Leah lives in rural Kansas with her husband, three dogs, and several barn cats. They are restoring an old farmhouse that was built in 1899 and are in the process of planting an orchard and a large vegetable garden. They have planted a large butterfly garden, and it is a certified monarch way station. And they are also a National Wildlife Federation certified backyard wildlife habitat. Leah May has always been fascinated by plants and their role in health and nutrition. She worked as an archaeologist for several years and learned a lot about edible wild foods. She has continued her research over the years. Leah became an archaeologist without going to college. She had always been interested in the subject, and she decided to join the Oklahoma Archaeological Society, which has both volunteers and archaeologists as members. She had read everything she could on the subject long before the internet. She was offered a job, and she took it. Then Leah read an article in Parade magazine in the Sunday paper. It was about volunteering for the Forest Service. She saw that the Black Hills National Forest needed archaeology volunteers. She called, and a month later, she was there for what was supposed to be a few weeks and evolved into a summer-long stay. While she was there, she was offered a full-time job. Leah says, "You can make dreams come true in unusual ways." So let's get to the interview, and then I'll be back with some links that Leah May suggests. And if you want to contact Leah May after you hear the interview, just send me an email at hermes@pacific.net, and I'll see that she gets it. So here we go with Leah May Horsley on wildcrafting, dedicated to Hannah Newcomer. Hello, Leah May. Welcome to
Tina. Hi.
Oh, no, I want to welcome you to the radio waves of Education Now. And I've told our listeners about you in the introduction to this podcast. They know you live in Kansas, and they know that your home is a certified Monarch way station, and it is also a National Wildlife Federation certified backyard wildlife habitat, right?
Yes, that's correct.
I just think it's so fantastic what you and your husband are doing there on that land, and I'm just so pleased to be able to share you with my listeners today. I've also told them in the introduction that you're an archaeologist and you worked as an archaeologist in the Black Hills, which is also really remarkable. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. It was a fun time to work in the Black Hills.
And you've done also some adult education.
Yes. Yes, I have. I've been a teacher in adult education for about 3 years.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I also told them in the introduction to the interview that we would focus on wildcrafting. And so can we start with you telling us what wildcrafting is?
Well, wildcrafting is the art of searching for edible and medicinal plants. Not everything you find when you're out foraging for food will be totally native. Things have been brought to this country from Europe and Asia, and as people traveled across the country, they have brought plants and seeds with them.
Right. I know that my grandparents came to this country from Greece, and they foraged. They did wildcrafting, but they didn't pass it on to me, and which makes me so sad. And I'm so excited to have you with us, because I just feel like children, that it should be a really vital part of an education for a child. And so this is really exciting, and plus all the history that you can get into by just what you've said, that a lot of the plants and seeds were brought here to this country. So what was really native to this continent before that happened, we don't know. Or do we?
We know some. Studies pollen will exist for thousands of years.
Uh-huh.
And people can have studied pollen, and they can tell us what plants have been growing throughout North America for thousands and thousands of years based on this pollen.
Wow, isn't that awesome?
It is. It really is. Science can tell us so much. Wildcrafting is a lost art, but more and more people are becoming very interested in it.
Yes.
And there are many books and internet sites where you can find all kinds of information about it.
And so what do you suggest? I know that if people are interested in websites that you recommend, they could always, if they didn't get a promotion, because it's in the promotion for this show, but if they didn't, they could always contact me at hermes@pacific.net, and I would see that they got the websites you recommend. Or could they just Google wildcrafting?
Google wildcrafting, and you can spend weeks going through all the sites that are available.
And are there
a new one this morning called Wild Man Steve Brill?
What is it again?
Wild Man Steve Brill, B-R-I-L-L.
Wild Man Steve Brill.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that sounds great. Okay, so they know now, you know, that if we pique their curiosity, teacher or student, and you want more information, Google wildcrafting or email me, and I'll send you the links that Leah May Horsley recommends. So are there rules for foraging for wild food?
Yes, there are. And you should always keep these rules in mind while you were doing it. Always ask permission to go on someone's land. That's very important. And also, it is illegal to forage in a national park.
Right. So if you come across an old abandoned farm, for instance, you should please ask permission of the people who own that farm, even though it's abandoned, or can you just go ahead and...
It would depend on where you are. A lot of people wouldn't mind, and sometimes it can be hard to find a landowner.
Right.
You know, if it's an abandoned farm, someone owns the land, but you may not be able to find that person. That's kind of something you'll have to take into consideration.
Are there real treasures to be found on these old abandoned farms?
Yes. You don't know what you can find. You can find garlic that someone planted 100 years ago that has since gone wild. You may come across wild raspberry and blackberry patches. Many fruit trees can go wild after they've been abandoned. You can find apples and pears and plums. No, you don't know what you're going to find.
Oh.
It's a treasure hunt, like you said.
Right. And should you take any identifying materials with you? For instance, if you don't know what when you find something, if you don't know really what it is because you've never seen it before, I don't think I had seen a particular berry, and I was on a walk with a person who knew a great deal about the area I live in, and you know, and they said, and these are edible, and I was like, oh my goodness, and so now whenever I see that particular berry, I know that it's edible, but I wouldn't have known if I hadn't. So, do you think you should take an identifying book or anything with you when you go on these foraging trips, wild crafting?
Yes. I suggest that you purchase several books. The internet is a great place to find information.
Uh-huh.
But you will need to take books with you. I suggest finding books that are specific to the area that you live in.
Okay.
You would like to have color photographs of the
yes.
plants in various stages of growth, and also line drawings, black and white drawings, which can give you a bit more detail and very good descriptions. And if at all possible, go with someone who knows what they're doing.
Right.
And they can pass that information on to you. While you're there, if there's ever any doubt in your mind, go ahead and pick the plant or, you know, harvest what you would like off that plant and take it home with you and do more research.
Yes, that's beautiful advice. And let's go back and continue with rules.
Okay.
Ask for permission, and you can't forage in the national park.
That's correct. Always forage in a responsible manner. You don't want to harvest all of one plant in a certain area. You need to leave some behind for other people that may follow you. And also, you will need to be sure and leave enough seeds and berries and flowers for the plant to propagate and continue to grow. You have to dig up a plant because you're wanting the roots. Be very careful about that. Many plants have been over-harvested because people have wanted the roots, and they're now becoming somewhat endangered.
Yeah.
An acceptable rule is take half and leave half. You may even want to take a little less than half.
Great. So, you know, part of being responsible is not over-harvesting.
That's correct.
How can you be sure that the plants that you're harvesting haven't been sprayed or poisoned by people who are trying to get rid of them so that they can plant something different or because they don't like the way it looks?
You can find wild, edible, medicinal plants just about everywhere you go. Stay away from plants that are growing along roadsides.
Uh-huh.
Because usually they will have been sprayed with something. And if they haven't been, they're exposed to the carbon monoxide and other emissions from cars and trucks. And also people have thrown trash and who knows what out there that may have landed on the plant. If you are going to be harvesting in someone's yard or in a city park, you may want to check with them and ask them if they've been using any kind of herbicides or pesticides.
All right. And how should you worry about animal excrement being on what you harvest?
You should, yes. You should always wash anything you harvest before you eat it. And you need to make, you know, if you're out in the cow pasture and something's growing in the cow pasture, it may or may not have been contaminated. Of course, you're out in nature, and animals do what animals do. So you may not be able to avoid it, but try your best to avoid it if all possible. Pay attention to what you're seeing around the food.
Right. And Are you going to tell us a story about parsley?
Oh, gosh. Well, I live in Kansas, and we have, in the summer, on summer mornings, there will be a lot of dew. And one day I went outside to pick some parsley, and I got a big bunch of parsley, and it was wet. I thought it was the morning dew on it, and I love the way parsley smells. So I stuck my face down in it, took a big old whiff. Well, it wasn't the morning dew on the parsley. And then I used it. I needed a shower. So please be careful. Don't know.
Well, you mentioned morning dew. Is there a best time of day to harvest, to go wildcrafting?
Mornings are the best time to harvest. The plants will have a higher water content, and they'll also contain more essential oils in the morning. As the heat of the day comes along, they will start to dry out.
All right. And do you want those essential oils?
Yes, you do. Essential oils are very important properties of many plants. They contain a lot of nutrients that we like.
Okay.
So you want those essential oils as much as possible.
That's something that I think that we don't really think about a lot, how important it is, the essential oils, and that they would have a higher content, the plants would, of water and these essential oils if you harvest in the morning. That's really...
You can do an experiment yourself, and if you have roses growing in your yard, you can go smell a rose first thing in the morning and then smell it again like at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you will notice a difference in the fragrance.
Yeah.
It won't be as strong in the afternoon.
Right. These are all great experiments to do with kids, listeners. Okay, how about I think you said to me that if at all possible, you should visit the area that you're exploring a few times throughout the year. Why would you do that?
Well, you will learn the area where you're at, and you can watch the plants grow from little shoots bursting up out of the ground till they become full grown. And this will help you to identify certain plants. A lot of plants can look the same when they're very young, and they don't begin to get their characteristics until they get a bit older. And also, many plants can be harvested several times a year. You can go through and pick wild raspberries throughout the summer or rose petals throughout the summer, and then many plants aren't ready to be harvested until fall. The roots are more nutritious in the fall. You will get your rose hips in the fall. So you can learn so much from going to the same spot once a month for 6 months.
And that's so much what a scientist does, is observe.
Yes.
Yeah, and so the observation skills that you would be using and encouraging by doing this is so important, and I would think that you could even take pictures so that you could have a visual picture of the process, or you could draw. And this is just wonderful, Leah May. And now you already told us that you feel that it's important to have an excellent reference book.
Yes.
With pictures and detailed descriptions.
Yes.
And I think you mentioned that it would be good to find one specific to the area that we live in.
That's correct. It's interesting to read about what the entire country has growing in it. But to start with, you pretty much can just focus on the area around you.
Yeah. What was your first reference book?
Well, you may remember him. He's going back a ways, but Mr. Yul Gibbons.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember who he was?
No, I don't.
Oh, he was a naturalist, and he was one of the early modern-day pioneers to promote wildcrafting. He believed in the nutritional and medicinal value of wild foods around the country. He wrote several popular books back in the 60s. The name of the first one was Stalking the Wild Asparagus.
Stalking the Wild Asparagus.
Yes.
Oh,
he was actually became kind of a folk hero and even made TV commercials and appeared on TV shows of that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's just wonderful. You know, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, my grandmother and my father did so much wildcrafting. My father knew the mushrooms, and my grandmother and her generation knew the wild plants. My grandfather would go out early in the morning, as you were talking about, and, you know, harvest. And not until they started spraying did he stop doing this in parks and other areas. And that was never passed on to us, Leah Mae. And so I have one. I tried passing it on to my students. I had people who were experts in wildcrafting, as you are, you know, come to the school and introduce it to my students. And I've had a few other guests on Education Now who talked about the subject, but not in this direct of a way. And I'm just so tickled to have you here. I'm just loving it. Thank you so much.
Well, yeah, I'm. You don't know how exciting this is for me. I could talk about this all day long. There's so much to learn and so much to experience. You could spend the rest of your life learning about this.
Yes, yes. Well, and I also feel like it's something that probably women were adept at in indigenous culture. Because, you know, they were doing the gathering, and they knew the plants, and I know that my grandmother knew that pennyroyal would bring on an abortion, or, you know, bring on a woman's period, but, you know, she was told that was forbidden, that knowledge was forbidden, and it's so sad to me. That's another thing that I love about this awakening in wildcrafting is that I feel like it is something that reveres, you know, that brings us back into a reverence for the feminine and the earth. And it's almost Earth Day, so tomorrow's Earth Day, and here we are talking about all of the things the earth gives us. Leah Mae,
This is so important, and when you go out there and you're searching for nutritious, healthy food, you learn so much, and you become a part of everything. You notice the sun, the warmth of the sun on your shoulder, and the breeze in your face. You can hear the insects communicating with each other, and the butterflies and the bees, and it's a very peaceful activity.
Yes. Yes, it puts you in harmony with it all.
Yes, it does.
Well, Leah Mae, when you worked as an archaeologist in the Black Hills of South Dakota, did you do much wildcrafting?
We did quite a bit. The Black Hills, of course, all parts of the country, are full of so many wild plants that you can eat. And I was fortunate enough to work with people that knew a lot, and they passed it on to me. One of my best experiences was I was working with another lady on Inyakara Mountain in the Black Hills, in the Wyoming portion of the Black Hills, and we were doing a survey, and we came across an area where a bunch of the ponderosa pines had died and fallen over, and the area was just covered and wild raspberries.
Oh.
And, oh, they're delicious. Just absolutely delicious. This was such a treat.
Oh, yes. That would be... Oh. And
I didn't know if we were going to be able to make it out of there or not. There were so many raspberries. So we decided to take a lunch, and we had wild raspberries for dessert.
I'm sure you did. And can you eat them... fresh or dried?
You eat the raspberries fresh. They're so delicate. that you probably won't be able to take them home with you.
Right.
But the raspberry leaves can be collected and taken home and dried and used fresh or dried.
So you can actually use the raspberry leaves.
Yes.
And you know, eat those fresh wild raspberries. Don't try to dry those out, but the leaves.
So wind up, by the time you get home, you'll have a mush of wild raspberries. But the leaves are very high in vitamins and minerals, and they make a real nice herbal tea.
Yeah, right. That's wonderful.
When I talk about herbal teas, I would like to give a warning that any herbal tea you make will not taste like a Celestial Seasonings herbal tea, because they add flavors to it, and you will just be using the fresh or dried herbs with no additional artificial or natural flavorings.
Right. Yes, I know this, but for our listeners who don't, thank you for bringing that up. Well, one thing I would like to talk about is dandelions, and when we were communicating about the show, you had also said you'd like to talk about dandelions because that was one of the things my grandfather would harvest. And so can you talk to us about dandelions?
I'd love to. They're my favorite.
Oh, great.
And dandelions are one of the plants that are not native to the United States. They were brought here from Europe, and they now grow worldwide. But all parts of the dandelion are edible and nutritious. They have many medicinal qualities to them. But in addition to, I consider them almost the perfect plant. In addition to their benefits, the flower is so pretty. It's such a bright, cheerful yellow.
Yes, it is.
And they're probably the first flower that you picked and gave to your mom. All of his love dandelions.
Yeah, and they look like the sun.
They do. They're just so cheerful and happy looking to me.
Right. And then when they dry out, they have those lovely little white seeds that when you blow on them, they look like little helicopters.
And they just go everywhere.
Yes.
Little kids just love to blow dandelion flower seed heads.
Right, yeah.
But yes. Dandelions, in addition to feeding us, dandelions also provide food for bees and butterflies, and rabbits love them.
I've
spent a lot of time watching rabbits just sit there and nibble on my dandelions. I let dandelions grow out here.
Of course.
We have lots of them.
Yeah, and you can harvest them. What's the season?
You can harvest the leaves from spring till fall. As the summer progresses, you'll want to pick the young, tender leaves because as they get older, they become bitter.
Right.
Once fall has come and there's been a couple of frosts, the leaves will lose their bitterness. Dandelion flowers can be harvested at any time, and the roots are harvested in the fall after there has been a couple of freezes. Or you can also harvest them in the early spring if you want to.
And you can actually eat the yellow portion of the flower.
Yes, you can. The little green portions of the flower may be a bit bitter, but the yellow petals, just pull them out and toss them in your salad if you want to, or if you're cooking something like rice, you can add a few little dandelion petals to your rice, and it'll turn a real pretty yellow color, and you can also batter and deep fry the dandelion flower heads.
Wow.
I live in the South, and everybody fries everything down here.
Well, you know, they didn't, we never ate the flowers. We ate the greens, but they ate the large greens, too, and they called them pitikakia, which means bitters.
Oh.
And there were
the
other...
The bitterness of the dandelion leaves helps aid your digestive system.
Uh-huh.
Nowadays, people don't... Bitter foods are almost out of our diet.
Right.
Which has been a great loss to our digestive system.
I didn't know that connection. So thank you very much for that, Leah May, that the bitters aid digestion. Well, I knew they would hunt for, you know, because I would be listening to them. And I understood the Greek, what they were speaking. And they would, when they would see something, if we were, you know, if we were going on a picnic, which we did in a big group of people, or just, you know, going from one town to another, and they would see something on the hill, like, oh, prikakia, you know, or, oh, you know, vruves, and the cars would stop, and the women would get out, and they'd be filling their aprons with these, you know, delicious things that I never learned what they were, but I always, and then they would just boil them just, you know, so that they were not too much, and they would use a little bit of the water from boiling them with lemon and salt and a little bit of olive oil, and we would eat them with French bread. It was delicious.
It sounds wonderful.
I miss it.
Excuse me. I'll say that again. That just sounds wonderful.
Oh, I heard you. Now, how about dandelion? You said something about dandelion leaf tea. And that before...
Yes, I would like to mention, though, you said that they would use lemon juice.
Yes.
When cooking greens.
No, afterwards.
The acid in the lemon helps the body to process the iron that is in the leaves.
Oh, yeah. You had sent me something about that, but I had never thought about how it would have been, because we use a lot of lemon. This is just such fantastic information. And then also that it helps in the digestive system function better, the dandelion leaf tea. And then when I mentioned the lemon, you were saying that also aids digestion?
Well, it helps your body to absorb and process the iron.
Iron.
In the tea.
All right, to process the iron. Oh, this is wonderful. Now...
Well, the people in olden times, ancient times, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, I don't know if they knew all this stuff, but we've come to, through scientific experiments, we've come to realize that the acid with these leafy green vegetables is necessary for proper nutrient absorption. Cooking tomatoes with a fat like olive oil helps to release more nutrients. And as more and more time goes on, it's being proven that the old ways of cooking are so healthy and nutritious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can talk forever.
That's great. You were saying that they're higher in beta carotene than carrots when the dandelion leaves will help to restore energy and vitality. And even
yes, they're considered a tonic herb.
A tonic herb.
And you can make a dandelion tea every day out of the roots or the leaves. And it's totally safe, and it just helps to build your body back up. They're high in vitamins and minerals. Like you said, they're higher in beta-carotene than carrots. You'll find potassium, phosphorus, magnesium, zinc, B vitamins. They're extremely healthy for you and will help to restore your energy.
And there's iron in there too, right?
Yes.
Oh, this is good, because I hear so much lately about people not, you know, being low in iron. And so this is both a lemon, what you've told us about lemons and the acidity and how it helps get that iron, and that there's iron in these in the dandelion leaves, in a tea like that. It's just exciting, so exciting.
Yes, that works with spinach and other leafy greens like collards or chard. My family's from the South, so they didn't use lemons that much.
Uh-huh.
But we all used vinegar.
Right.
To mix our greens.
Yeah, which still has that acid. Do you suppose it has the same property as a lemon?
I think that they contain a lot of the same properties.
Right.
A good apple cider vinegar and lemons are very good for your body. They're good for your liver. Mm-hmm. They're good to help flush out impurities and toxins that may be in your body.
As a, on a salad, we would at home, our family would use. We never bought dressings. on a salad was olive oil. A good wine vinegar, and salt and pepper.
Well, I don't buy salad dressings anymore.
Uh-huh.
I grew up eating them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can make your own salad dressings that are so much healthier and so cheaply, and they just take a minute or two to mix up.
Right. Well, now, more on dandelions, are there some properties that other medicinal properties that they have, or anything else you want to tell us about? What about the leaves, the white milky sap?
Okay, the white milky sap from the leaves can help to remove warts, moles, pimples, calluses, or sores, and they can also soothe bee stings and blisters.
Wow.
Dandelions are wonderful, amazing plants. I could talk for days about dandelions alone.
And how about the...
I don't understand why people want to dig them up.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, most people don't dig them up. They poison them.
Right. What about the root?
The roots should be harvested in the fall and wash them off real good. You can eat them raw or put them in soups or salads. They don't taste all that great, but they don't taste all that bad either.
Uh-huh.
Why
would you want to eat them?
Dandelion roots contain most of the same medicinal properties and nutrients that the leaves do.
And so it's an herbal...
If you have dandelions growing in your yard instead of poisoning them, dig them up and save the roots. Dry them and save them and use them in teas later on.
Or in soups.
Dinner.
Because they're a wonderful herbal remedy.
Yes, they are. Dandelions are good for what ails you.
Okay. Well, what would you like to talk about next? You want to talk about wild roses and strawberries?
Depending on where you live, you may be able to find wild roses and strawberries growing. I have found them growing in the mountains and also in wild roses growing just about everywhere, in the prairie, in the mountains. The wild strawberries are delicious. They're little teeny tiny things.
Right,
and
I know.
And they grow low on the ground.
Yes, I
they
know.
They can't be easy to overlook.
Yeah, they can be, and they are so delicious.
Oh, they're just fantastic.
Yeah.
I've been lucky enough to find a spot that had enough strawberries for me.
And how about the petals of the wild roses? Are they edible?
The petals of the wild roses are edible, and they have a slight little spicy taste to them. The most prized part of the wild rose is the rose tip that will show up after the petals have fallen off. And in the fall, they'll begin to turn red. And the wild rose tips contain a lot of vitamin C in them.
Mm.
And they can be picked and made into a tea fresh, or you can dry them and make them into a tea also. One of my favorite recipes in the fall time is I like to make applesauce from the fall apples, and I'll save the apple skins.
Uh-huh.
And I will take a big, good-sized handful of them and put them in a pan, cover it with a lot of water, maybe about an inch above the apple peels, Throw in a handful of rose hips and a cinnamon stick or two. Let simmer on a low heat, covered for about 10 or 15 minutes, and you'll come up with a delicious tea. And the tea's good drinking it by itself, or you can mix it with some apple cider or apple juice.
Oh, that sounds so wonderful. I'm going to, let's repeat that for people who are listening. You take the peelings of apples, and are these dried out or fresh peelings?
No, just fresh, but when you're making applesauce, just save your peels and make your tea right after.
Right. And then put a handful of these peelings to a quart of water, along with a handful of rose hips and a cinnamon stick.
Yes.
Bring it to a boil, then reduce the heat until you get a simmer, and cover it, and simmer it for about 10 minutes, and then strain it, and you can mix it, drink it like that, or you can mix it with a good organic apple juice or apple cider.
That's correct. Thank you for putting it so nicely for me.
Well, you wrote it to me.
My brain goes ahead of my mouth.
you wrote it down for me so I could just put it out there. I could reflect it. Oh, this is so fun, Leah Mae. And is there someplace you particularly want to go right now, or do you want to talk about wild peppermint?
We can go ahead and go with wild peppermint next.
Okay.
Wild peppermint is fantastic, and you should be able to find it in most parts of the country. Generally, you'll find it in kind of a moist, shady area. I have always found peppermint by smelling it first before I actually saw it.
Uh-huh.
And it's wonderful to make a fresh tea out of. You can even chew on a leaf or two and freshen your mouth up with it. Mm-hmm. A peppermint has a very strong fragrance, so if you're hiking quite a distance to get to it, the smell may become overpowering before you get home.
Mm-hmm.
it does taste really good, and it's almost worth the smell.
Yeah. Oh, and okay, now how about pine trees? I mean, pine nuts are one of my favorite things. Can you talk to us about pine trees and what they have to offer?
Well, most parts of the pine tree are edible. And I think most people don't really realize that. But yes, pine nuts are used in various dishes around the world. And the seeds, also known as, are called pine nuts. Huh. And they contain thiamine, protein, and vitamin B1. The pine nuts are located inside the cones of the pine tree. Open pine cones can be shaken to dislodge the pine nuts. Pine cones that are closed can be harvested and placed in the sun or near a campfire for a few days. This heat will cause the pine cones to open up, and the pine nuts can then be shaken out.
Right.
So you can eat the pine nuts raw or roasted.
Right. And people use them to make pesto.
Yes. I use pine nuts in pesto, and they have such a delicious taste.
Oh, yes. And I use them to make what I call Greek dressing. Just so delicious. I just love them. And I know that native peoples in my area harvest them and use them in so many ways. Now you wrote to me that although the bark of the pine tree is edible, you don't want to use it unless it's an emergency and need food, because go ahead, tell us why.
The inner bark of the pine tree is the portion of it that is edible. So you have to peel off the outer bark and then strip the inner bark off, which actually kills the tree.
Right.
So unless you're absolutely starving and you have to have food right then and there, it's best to not harvest any of the pine bark.
Okay, well, thank you for that. That is something I did absolutely not know. Now, the pine tree needles are edible and full of vitamin C. I knew that, and I think that, but I don't know if a lot of other people know that. So that the pine tree needles are edible and have a slight a lemony flavor, and that they're very high in vitamin C. But you suggest that you pluck a handful of needles off a branch and chew them to extract the nutrients. Is that right?
Yes, and that's my favorite way to eat them.
Wow.
They're a little sour, a little tangy, and you have that little bit of lemony flavor to them, and they will activate your saliva, taste buds, and your saliva will just, like if you're eating a lemon, it'll just open your mouth up and freshen it, and it will actually help to quench a thirst.
Right. And if you want to get the vitamin C out of it by cooking it, You told me that you shouldn't cook it. You should cook it for 5 to 15 minutes, not any longer, in boiling water. Or else
the longer you cook the pine needles, the more vitamin C you will lose.
Right.
You can make it into a tea if you want, but my favorite method is just to chew on a few leaves or needles.
Right, I bet that's the oldest way too.
Probably. I think it tastes better just chewing on the needles than it does when you make it into a tea.
Right,
that's my personal preference.
Leah May, what is pineapple weed?
Well, pineapple weed, pretty fascinating. The first time I found it, I didn't really know what it was. I thought it was chamomile,
uh-huh.
But it looked a little different. And fortunately, I always have a backpack with my reference books in it. So I sat down and started flipping through my reference book, and it was pineapple weed, which is a cousin, a close relative to chamomile or chamomile tea. It actually contains the same nutrients and medicinal benefits as chamomile tea does.
Wow. You
can find it growing almost anywhere. It grows in poor soil, abandoned plots of land. It's been found growing in sidewalks. I found it growing up in the Black Hills in an area that was shady and had very healthy soil. So it can grow anywhere.
And why is it called pineapple weed?
Well, when you crush it and smell it, it will have a slight pineapple smell to it.
Uh-huh. And
the flowers are edible, and you can make teas out of them or toss them in a salad. The leaves and stems are also edible, too.
And what color are the flower petals?
Well, they don't have flower petals. You will just see a little green nodule, kind of a yellowish green nodule at the end of the stem.
The chamomile
has white flower petals that come off of that nodule, but the pineapple weed doesn't.
Okay. Tell your doggies that I will only keep you a little bit longer. They're sick of sharing you with me.
Bored. George is still a puppy, and he gets bored easily.
Okay, and so you can pick these little green nodules, and which are the flowers of the pineapple weed, and you can use them fresh or dried.
Yes, you can. And actually, they're very good. You can make an infusion or a tea out of them, and they're excellent for sores. If you've got a sore that's not healing quite well, or your cat or your dog does, the chamomile tea or the pineapple weed tea, and the chamomile does the same thing.
Oh.
Very good for sores like that. I have treated all of my dogs and the cats with chamomile at one point or the other. And like I said, the pineapple weed does the same thing.
And it's a, so it's a very effective bug repellent?
No, yes. You can pull off a handful of the leaves and rub them on your skin, and it repels bugs.
Oh, that's exciting. Do you suppose it will work with mosquitoes?
That I don't know. I haven't found too much that repels mosquitoes.
Yeah, but you're saying so if you crush the leaves and rub them on your skin, it will repel a lot of bugs. But that if you want to treat like skin sores, that you would make an infusion or a tea and gently apply that with a cotton ball, right?
Yes.
Wow, what a gift that plant gives us. I can't believe it. Okay, so let's move on now. Do you want to talk about red clover? Is red clover edible and healthy for the wildcrafter?
Yes, it is. And red clover doesn't grow everywhere.
Right. It
usually grows in the cooler northern areas. But it's very easy to find. It grows in meadows and pastures.
We have it here. Yeah.
Oh, do you have it there?
Yeah.
It's very easy to identify.
Right.
And it was another plant that is not native to the United States, but it's been brought over from Europe and now grows all over the, you know, all over the northern part of the country.
And it has what I didn't know is that it was edible, you know, for humans. That's what was surprising to me.
It is, and the red clover flowers are very high in calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, and potassium, niacin, and vitamin C, and it has antioxidant powers also. You can even buy red clover seeds and sprout them to add to your salads.
Wow.
It's lettuce.
Wow. That's so amazing. That's so amazing. Red clover.
The young and tender shoots and leaves are also edible. But the older ones can become tough. So if you stick with the young tender leaves, you'll be fine. And the flower heads also contain protein, but they need to be soaked in salty water for a few hours or briefly boiled or cooked before eating so that they are easier to digest.
Okay.
You can also use the flower heads in making a healthy, nutritious tea.
Okay, that's all stuff I did not know. And another thing, can humans eat alfalfa?
Yes. Yes, we can.
That's something else I didn't know.
Alfalfa tea is delicious.
Uh-huh.
If you're lucky enough to live somewhere where alfalfa is growing, by all means, try it. It is a delicious tea, and it contains vitamins A, B6, B12, C, D, and E. Alfalfa also contains calcium, iron, magnesium, potassium, phosphorus, and more than 300 nutrients and phytonutrients. You know, we can get so many of our vitamins and minerals from plants.
Right. I know. I try to get all of that from what I eat. I have now for a long time rather than through some, you know, supplement. And so this is really great information. And is there vitamin K in that alfalfa? Because that's something. Okay, because that's something else that's a vital vitamin. Okay, do you want to talk about flowers? Like sweet violets and do we have time?
Hasn't started beeping yet.
Okay. Because I'm having fun, and as long as you're having fun too, let's keep going.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
I want to
so
tell
many
our
listeners.
Yes.
So many flowers that grow wild or in our yards that are landscape flowers and plants are edible and nutritious. violets, also known as sweet violets or the English violet or the common violet. They grow most everywhere in shady woodland type areas. If you don't live in an area like that, you can buy seeds and grow them yourself, and they will eventually spread quite a bit, and you'll have a lot of violets growing. Do not eat the yellow violets, which grow in wetlands, because they may cause gastrointestinal problems, distress. They may give you a tummy ache, might make you sick.
Uh-huh.
And African violets are not true violets, so do not eat them either. You can do many things with violets. Add them to a salad. You can make jelly out of them. Put them in ice cube tray with water, and then put those in your lemonade or your water and have pretty ice cubes.
Yeah.
You can also make candied or sugared violets or rose petals, and you can do that by dipping them in an egg white and then sprinkling them with sugar, preferably the super fine sugar. And then let them dry. And if you don't want to use the raw egg whites, you can buy a meringue powder that mixes with water where you can do the same thing. And this is a lot of fun to do to decorate a cake or add to a bowl of ice cream, something like that. A pretty little violet on top of a cupcake is just gorgeous.
Oh, it sounds just wonderful. So once again, when you do candy violets, you just dip them in egg white or an egg white substitute, and then you sprinkle them with a refined sugar. Now, by refined sugar, do you mean powdered sugar, or do you just mean a really well-refined white sugar?
A really well-refined white sugar.
Okay.
You can use powdered sugar, but I think it's prettier with the sugar, the refined
sugar. This is so exciting. I want to do this with students. Oh, man. What a fun
experience. I made a wedding cake one year for a friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And I decorated it with the sugared rose petals. And it was so pretty.
Oh, it would be. I mean, just thank you so much, Leah Mae. This is a fantastic information and experiment and recipe, and it's just really neat. Okay, how about elderberry?
I love elderberries. You can find them growing wild in many areas of the country, or you can grow them yourself. You may find them on an old abandoned farm. Once you have an elderberry plant bush, it will keep on growing and growing. Elderberries have been used as a folk remedy for centuries around the world. They contain more antioxidants than cranberries do.
Wow. More antioxidants than cranberries.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it's hard to, if you have them in your yard, you can get them fresh, but mostly you'll be able to find them. If you're not growing them, you can find them dried.
Right.
Elderberries are used to boost the immune system and for coughs, colds, and flu.
Wow.
Stuffy nose, it will help to get rid of that mucus.
Wow, that's just amazing.
Elderberry juice was used to treat a flu epidemic in Panama in 1951.
And it worked.
And it worked.
And we don't know about it because the big drug companies.
That's right. We won't go
into the politics of why we aren't, we aren't really celebrating what nature has given us to keep us healthy.
Nature has given us so much, and we've lost so much of that information.
Yeah. Now, you can make elderberries, you can be taken as a tea, right?
You can take your elderberries, fresh or dried, and make a tea, or you can make it into a syrup if you want to. The elderberry flowers, here's the southern thing again, they can be dipped in a batter and fried.
Wow!
And you can make wine from elderberries, or the elderberry flowers.
I've heard about elderberry wine, but that's about it. until this interview.
Elderberries are very high in amino acids, flavonoids, sugar, vitamins A, B, and they're very high in vitamin C also. I have 3 elderberry bushes, and when they're in bloom, they smell so sweet and delicious.
Yes.
And you can actually smell them from quite a ways away, 10, 15 feet away.
Right.
Now, the berry, the elderberry, does not taste like the way the flowers smell.
No.
They're very rich and earthy tasting and not very sweet at all.
Yes, my daughter-in-law has told me that she knows a lot about wildcrafting too, and we've talked a little bit about elderberries. But she's, and I'm sure she's going to really love hearing about taking the flowers and battering them and then frying them. Because that's something that I had never heard of. Now, what about honeysuckle, Leah May? Is honeysuckle edible?
Honeysuckle is edible, but only the Japanese honeysuckle is.
So only the Japanese honeysuckle?
Yes. Well,
it is the most what?
It's the most common one found around the United States. It grows wild on long vines.
Uh-huh.
And become invasive, and it's the one that has little white and little gold flowers growing on it.
Yeah, I have it.
You have it?
Uh-huh, yeah. And so tell us about it. Tell the listeners. It's high in
honeysuckle is high in calcium, magnesium, and potassium. You can parboil the leaves and eat them as a vegetable. The buds and flowers are edible and can be made into a syrup or jelly or ice cream or puddings.
Wow.
The entire plant has been used as an alternative medicine for thousands of years in Asia.
Wow.
And if you can just walk by one and pick off the little flower and put the end in your mouth and suck on it and get just a little drop of sweetness.
Right. And you're saying that these plants, you know, if you look around, you'll probably find them in your own yard or in your own neighborhood.
That's right. Wildcrafting doesn't mean you have to go out to the forest and hunt for foods. You can find them anywhere.
Right. And you can also make sure that your yard is an edible landscape.
That's right. It's a lot of fun to plant these in your yard and then go out and harvest it. You can do it if you have a large yard, or if you just have a small patio, you can plant many flowers and herbs in a container and or a pot, and then go out there and pick your flowers and add them to your salad.
Mm-hmm, right. And what you're also doing then by doing this is creating a place for the bees and the butterflies and the moths to also flourish.
That's right. And it is so much fun to sit out there and watch the bees and the butterflies and the moths enjoy your garden.
Right. And we have this interdependence between ourselves and the plants and the insects, and you can really get in touch with it when you start investing in this way of living, in my opinion.
Not only honeybees that are pollinators, but butterflies, moths, and other types of bees will go from flower to flower and deposit pollen.
Right.
They're all necessary for our plant food to grow.
Right. Now, we haven't talked about flowers that we don't think of as wild, like daylilies and tulips and hybrid roses. Do you want to talk at all about those, or do you want to save that for another time?
Are we running out of time?
I am. We can go on. It's your battery that I'm concerned about, not my time, because I'm having a lot of fun And I know that our listeners are enjoying it too. So you tell me if we have time to talk about these plants, the daylilies, the tulips, and the hybrid roses.
We may want to go to like the roses and the basher buttons and the calendulas, some of those that can be put in pots and grown.
Okay. Okay.
Daylilies, you kind of have to, you know, they're okay. They're fine, but you have to have a bunch of them.
Yeah, so.
So, I guess we'll go.
To the calendulas?
The roses,
to the roses? Roses and mint, or to the calendulas?
Let's do the roses and mint and then go to the calendulas.
Okay. Talk to us about hybrid roses.
Hybrid roses are edible also. Many climbing roses and hybrid roses don't have the rose tips that the wild roses do. But you can find a few varieties of roses, such as the rugosa roses, that produce flowers that look like wild roses, and they have large rose tips that you can harvest in the fall. If you don't have a lot of room, miniature roses that grow have little tiny flowers, and they only grow about 1.5 to 2 feet tall, maybe that wide, can be planted in a pot or in a small area of your garden. And you won't get the rose tips, but you could still use the rose petals to add to your salads if you would like to.
Yes.
Mint should always have a place in a garden somewhere. There are so many varieties of it, and it's so healthy and nutritious. Spearmint is one of my favorite. And mints will grow just about anywhere, from hot, dry areas to moist, shady areas.
I have so much mint. And it's one of the things that when I first moved into this cottage, I stepped out of the car, and the smell of mint just... You know, and it's just, I just love having it. I love cooking with it. I love making teas with it. I love decorating with it. Making teas. And I heard that as a tea, it cools you down. But my friend Karina was saying, well, if you add a little ginger to that, then you could drink it in the winter and it wouldn't cool you down. And so, I love mint.
Oh, mint is delicious. I will make a glass of a quart jar of water mixed with lemon slices and a little bit of spearmint. And then let that set overnight and then drink that the next day. It makes a delicious water.
Oh, my. Yum, yum. I'll try that.
Sometimes I've added ginger to it also. Ginger is very good for you.
Yes. Yes.
But mint, unless you have a large area, you would probably want to grow some mint in a pot because it can become invasive.
Yeah, take over everything.
That's right. And there is also lemon balm, which is a member of the mint family, and it has a lot of nutrients and medicinal qualities in it. And it's real easy to start from seed. Whereas other mints, it's best to get a cutting from someone or to buy a plant. But you can grow lemon balm from seed.
Right.
And it will come back every year.
Yeah. Okay. You can grow lemon balm from seed, but it's best to get a cutting for mint.
That's correct.
And if you don't want it to take over your yard, grow it in a container. Because it's very invasive, right?
Right.
Yeah, I find that it's very invasive too, but I've managed to control it. Well, so we've done mint and roses. Where should we go now? Do you want to talk about calendulas or nasturtiums, which are very yummy and spicy?
Yes. Okay. Now, with many flowers that you'll find in a garden, such as the calendula, there are several varieties of it. And you will want to find the variety that is used for medicinal qualities. Best way to do that is to talk with someone that sells it, such as Horizon Herbs. You can always give them a call or go on their website, and they sell all these flower and herb seeds that contain the medicinal properties that we're looking for.
So Horizon Herbs.
Yes.
And a person could just Google that, Horizon Herbs, and get to their website.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're very helpful there.
Right.
Very friendly and very helpful. Calendula, the flowers are edible and they're prized for their medicinal purposes. Calendula has antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties, as well as being an astringent and an antiseptic. Calendula has a high natural iodine content, which is responsible for its antiseptic properties. Calendula creams are used to treat minor skin problems such as acne, eczema, insect bites, diaper rash, and burns. And my phone's getting ready to go dead.
Okay, so we should move on. I do a calendula lotion. Well, we just have to have you back, Liam A., so that we can talk some more. I hope that will be possible. This was just so wonderfully fun for me, and if anyone wants to just send me an email at hermes@pacific.net, I will send them the recipes that you recommend and also the links that you recommend. And just thank you so very much for being a guest today on Education Now, Liam May. I had just a wonderful time, and I feel that everyone will enjoy this show.
Well, thank you for having me. It has just been so much fun for me. I've really enjoyed myself.
Oh, great. We'll be in touch.
I'm afraid I'm going to hang up on you any second.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Well, there you have our podcast on wildcrafting with Liam May Horsley. It was so much fun for me. Leah and I did this interview just before Earth Day, and I'm recording this now on May Day, so it seems very appropriate. Leah May has sent me some recipes. If you're interested in these recipes for fried dandelion flowers or other dandelion recipes, for violet jelly, just send me an email to hermes@pacific.net, and I'll see that you get the recipes. I am trying to put them all up on the Education Now Facebook page, so you can always access them there. I was just delighted to talk with Liam May, and if you have any comments or questions for her, please do send me an email at hermes@pacific.net, and I will see that she gets your comments or your questions. Remember that you can listen and download free anytime at the website, and please join us on the Education Now Facebook page or our Google Plus page to leave comments and join the conversation. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education. Education Now podcasts are listed on the American Montessori Society website at www.amshq.org. Look in the local events pages. Before I tell you all goodbye and thank Liam May again for being my guest on Education Now, I want to tell you that on Thursday, May 17th, my guest will be Mike Lanza, author of Playberhood, Turn Your Neighborhood into a Place for Play. He also blogs at playberhood.com, and I'm looking forward to interviewing Mike and sharing him with all of you. So until then, goodbye. Thank you.
are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.